This coming October will mark 10 years since American troops began fighting the Taliban in Afghanistan, making it our country's longest war ever. Journalist and documentary filmmaker Ben Anderson spent 2 months embedded with a Marine company as they embarked on the first mission of what the U.S. government hoped would become a prototype on how to win that war. The result, the Battle for Marja, is a close-up look at how battles are fought and of the complexities of integrating politics and military strategy. It airs on HBO tonight at 9 p.m., and I'm very pleased to have Ben Anderson join us now on our show. Hello.
Hi.
The attack on Marja was part of a larger operation called Operation Moshtarak. What were the four phases of this U.S. counterinsurgency strategy?
On paper, it sounds very simple. Clear, hold, build, transfer. So clear the town of Marja of the Taliban, hold on to that town, because in the past, because of a lack of manpower, areas had been cleared, then given up again. Build infrastructure, local governance, schools, roads, that kind of thing. Win over hearts and minds of the local population, then transfer to the Afghan government, the Afghan security forces.
And what was the anticipated timeline for all of this to happen?
Oh, they promised catastrophic success, their phrase. Very
catastrophic.
Strange phrase.
Well, there are a lot of strange phrases in this discussion.
There are. That's very true.
One of my favorites is courageous restraint that the soldiers should apply.
That one makes a little bit more sense because it really, I mean, when we landed on day one and I got transferred at the last minute to Bravo Company, and their plan was to land in the middle of Marja at 4 a.m. on day one of the invasion. And the Taliban had 4 or 5 months to prepare for this invasion. They knew it was coming. It was
because everybody had been warned.
Yeah.
Because they wanted the civilians to know so there wouldn't be civilian casualties.
Exactly. So there were trenches, sniper holes, IEDs, bunkers, and Bravo Company landed right in the middle of this at 4 a.m. And literally had to fight their way out. But on the first morning, we were stuck at the small crossroads as the sun rose, and we had to watch as 40 Taliban fighters, amassed around us and literally set up the perfect ambush around us. And the Marines couldn't fire until fired upon. The Taliban knew this, and they took full advantage of it.
Now, let's get back to the catastrophic timeline.
Yeah, catastrophic success within a few days, and an Afghan government in a box would be delivered in a few days. And a colleague of mine described it perfectly. He said a few months later, that box turns out to have been empty.
You know, Stanley McChrystal came up with that line about courageous restraint. It's just too bad that he didn't practice it a bit when he talked to journalists himself or when the people in his staff talked to journalists. Why did the government choose to launch the first attack on Marja of all places?
I mean, it was the largest remaining Taliban stronghold at the time. And I think on paper they thought that, as you said before, this was the first test of the new Obama policy of how to win in Afghanistan.
Was there some symbolism involved?
No. People had known for years that this place had to be taken at some point soon. Sending the Marines in, the first of the 30,000 surge. I think, very, very similar to choosing to invade Iraq and thinking that other countries in the Middle East would topple soon afterwards because Iraq would be easy. I think they thought Marja was the perfect place to try out this new policy and that it would work very well, therefore be rolled out across the country.
You were embedded with Marines of the Bravo Company. Did you have the opportunity to talk with them before you arrived in Marja?
Not a lot, no. I spent a day or two with them, and they were very open to me. I mean, the Marines are very different to any other piece of the U.S. military I've been with, and very different to the British military as well.
Well, you also did something similar with the British military.
Yeah, I've been to Afghanistan 8 times now with U.S. Army, U.S. Marines, and British military. And the Marines just really, this group of Marines, I've had a few problems with other Marines, but 1/6 Marines, Bravo Company, just really did not seem to care what anybody thought of them. So once I was there, once I was willing to keep up with them, go where they were going, sleep where they sleep, eat how they slept, I was allowed to film everything. And there wasn't a moment where I thought there was a question I couldn't ask or a thing I couldn't film.
So this was different from your experience when you were doing a BBC documentary called Taking on the Taliban with British soldiers?
It was very different. I mean, that one took months and months to negotiate. I had a minder with me who was constantly interfering and trying to stop me from filming things. The U.S. Army did the same thing. It's a lot more tightly controlled, and you get the sense they're trying to whitewash what's happening out there, whereas the Marines are willing to show it exactly as it is.
Do the foot soldiers grasp the greater political tactic here, or are they focused simply on winning a battle?
Some
doing
do.
Their job?
Some do. Some. I mean, one that I filmed a very touching scene where an officer meets a family where 3 children and a woman have been killed by a stray rocket. And he really believed in the mission. He really believed that the Afghanistan should not fall into the hands of I think Islamic fascist was his phrase again. So it hit him very hard when he had to meet the family where he'd been responsible for the death of four civilians. There are other Marines who, to be honest, they just want to get out there. One Marine said to me, "We want a shot at the title. We want to go out there and fight the best fighters in the world." And that's the only reason.
He's just proving himself.
Yeah, exactly. They just want to go out there and they want to fight and they want to kill the Taliban. And they delight in doing so.
One of the main characters in the film is the company leader, Captain Ryan Sparks, who, among other things, is in charge of keeping the morale up among his soldiers. How does he measure victory on the battlefield?
One Marine, it wasn't Captain Sparks, another Marine gave me a quote which I thought summed up the situation perfectly. Marines fight battles, they don't fight wars. So I think Captain Sparks will say, we were given our mission, we carried it out very well. And he's right to say that. The bigger stuff will drive you crazy. And you know, the policy, I mean, one senior Marine saw the film and said to me, "Ben, I think you made it look like we failed at the end." And I said, "Well, I don't think you failed. You performed your duty very well. But I don't think it's possible to separate the Taliban from the local population. And if your job, if everything you do is to bring in the Afghan government, and even a 10-year-old kid in Afghanistan knows the Afghan government is hopelessly ineffective, spectacularly corrupt, and people like the Afghan police are hated and feared in southern Afghanistan, and for good reason. I mean, every time you see the police arrive in a town, locals come up to whoever you're with and say, please don't leave us alone with the police. You know, and that's who you're handing over to, then you can never really win."
Although another concern in the past was you take a town like Marja, the Taliban leave, and they just simply, it's like squeezing a toothpaste tube, they simply go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then later, after you've left, they come back.
And the amount of resources and manpower it took to take Marja, that can't be replicated across Afghanistan. I mean, maybe in one or two places at once, but not across the whole country. So yeah, you're absolutely right. And the Taliban, I think their reputation for being some of the best fighters in the world is undeserved. But they are fantastic at just disappearing.
Now, why is it undeserved? They seem to be doing rather well.
The snipers are very good. They're very good at laying IEDs. As fighters, I was in situations where we were surrounded and hundreds of bullets were fired at us in open ground and no one was killed. So there are some very good snipers, some very good bomb makers. As fighters, they're not very good. Their only skill is they can completely disappear into the local population.
We see that a big challenge facing ground forces in Afghanistan is getting airstrikes approved. What procedures do the Marines have to follow? And what, as far as you can see, which things would get approved and why were others rejected?
The first few weeks, almost nothing got approved. They were requesting roughly 40 a day. Most of those were getting denied. When one was given permission, it had to come from the general. So it often took, I think it was 5 or 6 levels of approval before you got the general's approval. By that time, the planes had often run out of fuel and turned back.
And on top of it, all the people who you're trying to target have moved on, would assume.
Yeah. Oh, in 2 hours. I don't think I'm exaggerating to say in the first 4 or 5 days, I didn't see a single airstrike, which for Afghanistan is unheard of. In the past, there were airstrikes all the time, and airstrikes would be called, you know, without much thought.
My guest is Ben Anderson. His documentary, The Battle for Marja, is airing tonight on HBO at 9 o'clock. Was this battle supposed to be an Afghan and American-led mission?
Yeah, in Operation Mushtarak, it means together. And I think General McChrystal must regret making the claim that this is an Afghan-led operation. It's not even fair to say it was Afghans and Americans as partners. The Afghans were, at best, a massive hindrance to the operation.
And they're treated as subordinates. In fact, in some cases, rather insultingly.
Very insultingly, yeah. I mean, screamed at, all kinds of expletives, not respected at all. They were brought in after a few days to raise the Afghan flag. Honestly, I can't think of much else they contributed. They're quite good at spotting irregularities. They're quite good at spotting little things that aren't quite right and telling the Marines. The Marines then do something about it. But the Afghan army in Marja were nowhere near up to the task of doing the job on their own yet.
Did you have a chance to speak to any of the Afghan soldiers in your film and find out how they took this kind of treatment?
I mean, it's strange. They're not in Marja. They weren't really committed to learning. They weren't particularly motivated. It's almost like it was just a job. I have seen Afghan army elsewhere who are slightly better, but it's very strange how the Taliban can be such committed fighters and the Afghan army for some reason aren't.
Well, the Obama administration has promised to start pulling troops out of the region this summer and handing control over to the Afghan police and army. What would the Marines say to that?
I think anyone that's been on the ground would tell you it's fantastical to think that the Afghans are going to be ready. I think the plan is to take over, to hand over every single province of Afghanistan within the next 18 months to 2 years to Afghan security forces. And I cannot believe that's going to happen.
Well, you said that the Taliban fighters, whether they're great soldiers or not, have real commitment, but not necessarily the Afghan police and army, despite all of the attempts to train them and teach them how to think in a more sophisticated military way?
I mean, I've been back a couple of times since I did this film, and something very interesting happened in Kandahar recently. The U.S. Army were teaching the Afghan soldiers to go into villages and say to people, show us where an IED is and we'll give you $50. So the Afghan army went into a village ahead of the U.S. Army and found 23 IEDs straight away. Fantastic result. No one stepped on them. No one was killed. At the end of a few days of clearing these IEDs, the American army captain said to them, so did you do it? Did you say, you know, show us where the IEDs are and we'll give you $50. Do we have to start paying people? And the Afghan captain said, no, we said to them, show us where the IEDs are or start digging your grave. So that's more what the Afghan army will end up being like, rather than...
That's one way to win hearts and minds.
Well, the Afghan army, you know, they turn up with pictures of Massoud in their windshield. And to a lot of people in Afghanistan, he's a hero. To the people in the south, the Pashtuns, it's like me driving around New York with a picture of bin Laden on my windscreen. So the worst case scenario, and the thing that worries me the most, and I think a lot of people who have spent time in Afghanistan, is that at the minute we're gearing up for a civil war along the same lines as the one that happened when the Russians pulled out.
Some of the new recruits, the Afghan new recruits, were defectors from the Taliban, weren't they?
It's gone both ways. I mean, again, when I was there recently, an Afghan army soldier climbed up into a watchtower, fired into a base, killed two Marines, and then fled with the Taliban who attacked the base. It's very fluid out there.
There have been books about the blowback involved here, the Taliban fighting us with weapons that we supplied them to fight the Soviets and training that we gave them as well. Is that apparent?
One of the most shocking things in Marja was how good the snipers were. There was one sniper who fired four shots in the first 2 days and hit three Marines. Very professional, one shot every 6 or 7 hours, so no one had any idea where he was. When they finally found his position, he had 5.56 rounds. He'd left his bullet case on the ground. That's an ISAF NATO round. And I said that they respected him when they found the position, how well dug in he was, how well concealed he was. And I said, so who trained him? And they said, probably us at some point.
To fight the Russians.
Either to fight the Russians or he was in the Afghan National Army at some point and went back to the Taliban. You know, the problem with being so desperate to get so many numbers in the Afghan army in such a short space of time is you'll take anyone.
Now, is there any way to defeat the Taliban? When the U.S. went in, it was reported that most people in Afghanistan were thrilled because the Taliban had been so repressive. Now we hear that they have a lot of support. And there's even talk about discussions between the Afghan government and the Taliban leaders about coming to some sort of resolution of this whole
thing. And President Karzai said, right now, if you ask me to pick sides, I'd pick the Taliban. Shocking. And something that we vowed would never happen in Afghanistan could well happen. I think the best case scenario at the minute is a peace deal where the Taliban are given seats in government.
Do they think that they're winning the war, do you think?
Absolutely. And they think that in 2014, we'll be gone and they can claim victory. And I've got Afghan friends who think it's a serious possibility that if there is a civil war between the two sides, the Taliban could win.
Well, a big part of the operation is also, as you mentioned earlier, the relationship between soldiers and Afghan civilians. What was your impression about the civilian tolerance level of both the Americans and the Taliban?
Well, people in the South have seen so many people come and go over the last 20 or 30 years. I don't think it's possible to make people pick sides.
But they're Pashtun, as you point out, most of them. And most of the Taliban are Pashtun, aren't they?
Yeah. And so
is there another factor going on here?
Often the local population is the Taliban. They've got sons, uncles, and sometimes they're just fighting because it's $25 a day. That's the only reason they're fighting.
And the Taliban pay better than the Afghan government?
Now it's about the same. But yeah, they pay well, and they pay you a bonus if you kill a foreign soldier.
Where are they getting that money?
Opium, protection rackets. They're not short of money. Hmm. But I think, you know, my point is I don't think it's possible to separate the population in the South from the Taliban, especially when the population of the South have seen the Afghan government. And they've said some of them might not be in love with the Taliban, but compared to the Afghan government and the Afghan police, they prefer the Taliban. One guy in the Marja film says to me, look, like, you know, you say you've come to liberate us. It wasn't too bad. If you left them alone, they left you alone. And if there were disputes between families and tribes, they offered very fair and quick tribunals.
You mentioned that one of the goals of Operation Mushtarak was to go beyond pushing the Taliban out of Marja and reconstructing the town. And you revisited the company several months after the initial attack. How much progress had been made in that regard?
In the bazaar, the central bazaar of the part of Marja we were in, a lot of progress. The bazaar was almost unrecognizable. All the shops were open. They were thriving. The Marines had spent $600,000 doing it up. They'd employed thousands of locals in doing things from painting and building to just picking up litter. But then I went out on my own, interviewed 11 or 12 locals, and they all said the same thing to me. We don't want the foreigners here. We want them to leave. Life was fine under the Taliban. One even said that the Taliban are the sons of this land. They are not foreigners.
The Americans built a park like the ones you'd find in a U.S. suburb with benches that the townspeople don't even use. Is there a serious cultural disconnect? Isn't anybody aware of what an Afghan park might look like?
I mean, that park isn't popular, and that may have been a mistake. But they did other things which were popular. They built an ablutions block. They built a nice new mosque, which was popular. So they did. There were, you know, cultural misunderstandings there, but there are also some things that they did right. But still, the population weren't willing to pick sides.
During your time with Bravo Company, there were some civilian casualties. And there's a scene in the film where a condolence payment is made to a family. What exactly is the military protocol for that?
They meet the family the day after. They evaluate how many people have been killed, and they give them $2,500 per life lost.
And is that okay with the families?
I mean, the families took the money because they needed it, but no, it was. I mean, to be fair, the Marines didn't say this is to make it okay. They just said this is to help you out in the short term. This is if you need to travel to Lashkar Gah, the nearby place, to see your injured family members in hospital. They just said this is something to help you out in the meantime, and also to find yourself a new home.
Sorry, we killed your oldest son. Here's $2,500.
Yeah, but they didn't say this is all we're offering. They said this is just a small gesture for now. You know, they weren't saying that's enough. But yeah, it was still a horrible, very uncomfortable scene. And the Marine who's at the center of that scene, I've since spoken to him, and he said it's one of the most awkward moment of his entire life.
Are the U.S. goals in Afghanistan, the four phases that we mentioned, perhaps too optimistic, too idealistic? Would the best that we could hope for be to simply minimize the Taliban's involvement in a future government?
I mean, everywhere in Afghanistan seems to be stuck on the hold phase. So you can clear a town, you can hold on to it, but the build and transfer stages are a long way off. And as far as talk about little girls going to school or the women being liberated or there being a democracy in Afghanistan, I mean, I don't even hear that being mentioned anymore.
Unlike other films of this sort, you don't delve into the emotions of the soldiers on the battlefield. Was that a conscious decision on your part?
It was a conscious decision very early on. I've been with lots of other soldiers who appear emotionally vulnerable straight away, and that's obviously an interesting area to go into. As a filmmaker, the Marines just aren't like that. I mean, I don't know what it takes to break a Marine or to stop his momentum, but they were just machines. They just never stopped. They were, you know, in that sense, incredible. And I straight away realized this was a film about policy rather than a film about the emotional impact that war has on soldiers. And to be honest, I've seen a lot of films about the emotional impact of soldiers, and I'm more interested in what's going to happen to Afghanistan.
Well, similar to yours in some ways is the film Restrepo, which is up for an Academy Award. Is this form of immersive documentary filmmaking the best way to tell the story of a war?
Certainly not the best way. I think in southern Afghanistan, it's the only way. I couldn't move around freely in southern Afghanistan without being kidnapped or killed. In some senses, it's far from ideal because the military do have a lot of control over you. I was very lucky in Marja in that the Marines didn't exert any control whatsoever over me. But in other embeds I've done, there has been a lot of control. And it's been very difficult in other films to get the Afghan point of view across. In Marja, it was easy. I spoke to dozens of Afghans all the time.
Mm. Well, as you pointed out earlier, this is really the story of a battle, not of a war. Which is not the way other wars, at least older wars, were fought. Yes, you had a battle, but then you just kept on moving forward. There is no such thing as moving forward here, is there?
No, I mean, there's no front line. And as you said before, the Taliban can disappear and reappear elsewhere very easily. And actually what you see the Taliban doing now is recruiting people from other ethnic groups, which we're not doing with the Afghan National Army, and you know, targeting areas of the north, east of the country, where traditionally they've got no base.
I mentioned earlier that you also did a film about British soldiers called Taking on the Taliban. Do they have similar attitudes to American soldiers about what their mission is there?
Similar attitudes. The British never had the manpower to do the job out there, and they knew that.
But they're also
away.
Getting a different message from their government, aren't they? After Tony Blair left office, the government was a lot more wishy-washy about what it even saw its role in Afghanistan to be.
But the mission statement in 2007 with the British soldiers was called the comprehensive approach. And it was very similar to the counterinsurgency approach now of building things and winning over hearts and minds. You know, the cliche is target the population, not the enemy. If you target the population and win them over, it will be impossible for the enemy to operate. And the Brits actually had a very similar approach in 2007. So the McChrystal counterinsurgency policy didn't feel particularly new or revolutionary. It just felt like with this surge of the extra troops, they might have the manpower to achieve it.
Ben Anderson's film of being embedded for 2 months with American troops in the Battle for Marja will be debuting on HBO tonight at 9 o'clock. And I want to thank you so much for being here to talk about the Battle for Marja.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.